Thanks for listening to this Arrow FM podcast, shared on accessmedia.nz with the support of New Zealand On Air.
Kia ora, you're listening to Film Talks On Air, and my special guests with me and joining me today are Dr. Paul Wolfram and another special guest, Evelyn Kunda. We're here today to talk about the film Mari Mari. Welcome. Welcome, Paul and Evelyn.
Hello.
Thanks. Hello. Oh, delighted to be talking to you. Hello, good morning. So it's a lovely, lovely blue sky, clear, sunshiny day here in Masterton, but how is it where you are?
It's pouring with rain.
No. Oh, well, I hope that clears for you very soon. Paul, I wanted to start by talking to you and asking the first question that has been on my mind. How did you come to travel to Papua New Guinea and spend time there?
Oh, well, when I was an undergraduate studying at the university, I was studying music and dance, so ethnomusicology.
Ah.
And I went out to the outer islands of Papua New Guinea, mainly because I was too afraid of going to the highlands at that time. Even at that time, there was sort of not very nice news coming out of the highlands. So I headed out to the outer islands where I lived with a community in the rainforest there for about 2 years, learning their language, their culture, music and dance traditions.
What was that experience like?
Well, amazing. And obviously sort of life-changing, you know. When you go from Wellington into, you know, a completely different part of the world and live in the rainforest, you have absolutely no skills. We don't generally acquire machete skills or the ability to cut down trees or strip them of their bark and the ability to plant taro. And so I was a fully grown human male baby when I arrived. I had no skills whatsoever, and the people, you know, kind of wondered at me, how did I get to be so big and large and not know anything?
Wow.
And it's quite a humbling experience, you know, doing that sort of thing. And you have to subvert your knowledge and ways of knowing the world, but which suddenly become very, very useless in those environments. So I found myself really dependent upon other people. And when you're in that situation, you quickly have to adapt and adapt your ways to their ways.
That is incredible. I can see how this would have been a real life-changing experience for you, and then stepping back into New Zealand culture after being there, learning all these important skills and life lessons. What was it like stepping back into New Zealand culture?
Oh, the first time after a year and a half, I think I was in the bush and I came back, and I experienced that reverse culture shock that people sometimes talk about, where I found it difficult to understand, or, you know, this sort of culture that I'm supposed to be familiar with and comfortable with was suddenly foreign to me. So it's a really valuable thing to go through. We are so wrapped up in our cultural worldview, and we don't see that a lot of the ways that we perceive the world are just constructions from our culture. And it's a bit of a shock to see the ways in which we've, you know, constructed the reality around us to suit ourselves, to suit our narratives of the world. And that's what long-term ethnographic work really gives you, is the ability to see the ways in which the world has been constructed is not necessarily true.
Yeah.
So in that way, it's really deeply insightful work for both personally and hopefully the learning about other people.
Wonderful observations. I think I had, just through my own experiences of living in a non-English speaking country in Europe and being in England for a long time as well, when I came back, I had those same cultural critiques and questions about identity. So it was really interesting hearing you share those kind of experiences and a bit self-reflection and societal reflection as well. Now, you went back and you mentioned earlier that you had already heard stories about the highlands but wasn't yet ready to venture into that area. But at what point did you find yourself in that situation of actually heading into the highlands and indeed meeting Evelyn?
Yeah, so I continued my relationship with the first community I lived with for almost 20 years. I've been going and coming. So
wow.
Every couple of years I would go back and revisit and keep those connections strong. You know, they gave me a place in the community, a name and a clan group. So I've continued those relationships right up to now, and it's been a great sort of experience of my life. But every time I go to PNG, it's such a diverse and interesting country. I try to go to a new place. So if I've got the opportunity, I'll whip out and look at the Sepik River, which is fascinating, or go up to the highlands. And the first time I went up to the Eastern Highlands, which is where Evelyn is from, was in 2017. I was volunteer teaching at the University of Goroka up there. And and while I was up there, I started to come across these stories of Sangoma, witch attacks and sorcery violence. For at this time, I'd already, you know, read about it and I knew something about it, but I was just astounded by how common it was and how people would openly talk about people that they had been participants in the murder or the torture of. And it didn't account with my understanding of Melanesian culture, which had always been so warm and welcoming to me. And I hadn't seen this level of violence in the community before, in any community I'd lived with in Papua New Guinea. So I began to investigate. I went back the following year in 2018, and that's when I met Evelyn for the first time. Evelyn was working at that time in the Catholic Church as a volunteer sort of counselor and looking after some of the sorcery survivors, and somebody pointed me in her direction. So that's when we first sort of touched base.
And I'm going to then now ask Evelyn, what was it like, her impressions of meeting you for the first time?
First time you looking for there, you think one end long yet?
Time you ring here, me good and be looking number of lonely children and go one again, white man ringing me, became awesome.
First time she saw, because I called her first, and she saw a number from New Zealand, and she thought, oh, why is this white man calling me? So she heard me on the phone, and she knew that I was European, but she heard my talk pigeon and went, oh, this guy knows how to talk properly. And then said, okay, I'll meet with you.
So me thinking was, I am Savelo talk pigeon, I'm Savelo Papua New Guinea Peninsula and Maniana. I'm all right, meeting him.
So the trust began to build because of my language and cultural facility, and she thought, oh, okay, he seems like a reasonable person. I might add that it did take her another few days before she decided to fully trust me. She said, I'm going to go away and think about this.
Mm-hmm.
And she did.
Mm-hmm. Well, you also teach film and camera work, so I'm connecting the dots here, because you were originally there, you know, under musicology, but you moved into film. And where did the idea come from for you that you wanted to make a film and that Evelyn would be your subject?
Oh, sure. Yeah. So you're quite right. My doctorate is in ethnomusicology. When I first went to the islands, as I told you back in 2001, to study music and dance, it occurred to me that in Pacific culture, and especially in Melanesia or throughout Papua New Guinea, music and dance are not separate things. In fact, they use one word for both of them.
Ah.
So it seemed a bit strange to me that I would go and study the music without understanding the dance practices as well. So I thought, oh, well, in order to understand the dance, I'll have to record it on video and be able to play it back and break it down and understand it, you know, in that Western analytical way. And so I took a camera over with me when I went over in 2001, had to run it off solar panels and recharge. It was quite a challenge to get power where I was. But the people I was living with were quite interested. Not many people had seen video cameras before. And so they were quite interested in it. And soon they started to ask me, should we tell a story with the camera? And not only was I recording music and dance, but traditional mythologies as well. So the first feature film I made was with that community in the Outer Islands. It's called Story Tumbuna, or Ancestors Tales. And that went around the world. And I became increasingly interested in film as a medium. And eventually, by the time I'd graduated with my PhD, I made a couple more films, feature films. And I eventually drifted across the road from the music school to the film program where I teach, yeah. Film production these days.
Fantastic. So I'm wondering, you had spent time in the Highlands and you met Evelyn and you were hearing these stories about the societal belief around witches, but tell me more about that. What did you come to know about this?
Yeah, well, initially, because it's not my, I have good sort of cultural fluency throughout Papua New Guinea, and I can interact with most people, and but it wasn't my home area. With 800 different languages in Papua New Guinea, you've got just as many different cultural divisions, and there's certainly things that are common to all of the cultural groups there, but there are also differences. So I wasn't ready to kind of just leap in and start making a film. I spent the first year, 2 years, 2018 and 2019, just trying to understand the problem, trying to figure out what was going on. And actually, initially, I didn't put too much focus on people like Evelyn as human rights defenders. I put more focus on the perpetrators. As a man myself, I had the ability to kind of go into men's houses and into men's spaces in the Highlands. And because of my ability to talk with people, I would go into villages and spend a few days and talk to the people there, and particularly the young men who are the perpetrators most often, the ones that are the violent actors in the communities. And so I wanted to understand what was going on for them. You know, how could they turn on their own community members, often their own family members, and torture and kill them in such brutal ways? I just really was trying to understand how they could, you know, have the mindset to be able to do that. It was after a couple of years of researching that stuff and trying to understand what the police were thinking about it, what other government institutions were thinking and doing about it, what the churches were doing about it, that I began to think, well, what's the way to tell the story to an outside audience? How can I make this a story that will be a story of hope rather than of simply despair? And that's when I started to put my focus on Evelyn and her work.
The humanitarian side of things. So I'm trying to think of the right way to say this. In a simple way, I want to ask, what is it that you do to help and support the community that have been, gone through accusations of violence and indeed have experienced violence? But I guess I'm also like, how did this come about? Like, how did this actually start to evolve in society up in the Highlands?
So a couple of questions there. First one, you started making one M law supporting more. One thing will be making law supporting more South Africans. So the first thing that Evelyn kind of specializes in is she's a counselor of these survivors. These people, if they survive attacks, attempted murder, the torture, they often run away from their villages to the townships. And the towns are not very safe places to be, so they need support there. And that's where Evelyn takes them under her wing into the church grounds and just begins to get them to open up. You can imagine that they're often very traumatized from the events that have happened to them. So Evelyn's work is really about they've got a friend, they've got a supporter, somebody who will counsel them through the trauma, and then somebody who will stay by their side as they try and get their life back on the tracks again. Now, another half long question here. I'm asking you, something come up? This la sanguma passing or come up?
M time only got die come up. Only got pot long only yet inside your family home long or come up and shouldn't talk before no sanguma or fighting or meeting.
So mostly the accusations arise following the death or a sickness in the community, but most often death. Yeah. It's kind of long pre-existing belief in, you know, magical thinking in the Highlands. But it's only in these recent 10, 15 years that it's turned into violence. So, in fact, there was a long-standing belief in the Highlands that nobody ever died of illness or old age. People died of because they're eventually sorcerized. And so that's been there in some communities for a long time, yeah. But certainly people would be sorcerized, and you'd think, oh, they've been sorcerized by the next tribal group or our tribal enemies, and that was accepted. Now, with the rise of Sangoma in this practice, it's they're accusing their own family members and taking violent action against them. This never used to happen.
This is a lot to take in. How did you live through this, Paul? How did you and Evelyn, how do you both look after yourselves and take care of yourselves while you were documenting, while Evelyn was, you were documenting life? How did you protect yourselves in that situation?
Well, I mean, for me, you know, I have something of outsider privilege, I guess, in that I look like I'm clearly blonde and blue-eyed and don't necessarily belong there, and are not part of these sort of local tribal issues. So I wouldn't say that I'm completely safe, but I somewhat, you know, look like I'm not part of these things, and my ability to communicate with people and people understand that I've got a long experience there. I guess I find most people on one-to-one conversations really genuinely good people and have never come across issues. The issues really are for Evelyn, where she's living in those communities and she's rescuing and looking after, being associated with people who are accused of being witches. And, of course, that association is going to, you know, jump onto her as well. And she's going to be, as you know, thought of as being part of the, you know, or associated with these witches and become a target. So for Evelyn, it's much more risky, and she's living there on a day-to-day basis. So Evelyn, I'm asking her, how are you so protecting you yet? Nah, this like in dangerous work, so how you look out in you yet? So Evelyn's saying that, indeed, it is dangerous work and it can be really difficult. But one of the strategies she uses is that she's integrated with the communities and she's living with them and they know her on a daily basis. And she stands up in defense of these people. And then when there is an issue in the community, she's usually first there to contribute towards trying to solve it and to often trying to steer that narrative, that causal narrative of a death or an incident away from a Sangoma or a sorcery explanation. So she uses what I would term radical compassion. You know, she works with these people and is just constantly going, well, yes, you've done this to these people, but we must forgive, we must come together again, we must get through this together.
Wow. How has it been bringing the documentary that you've made in Evelyn to New Zealand cinemas? You've had your first screening in Wellington. How did it go?
Oh, it went really well. Yeah, our premiere screening was last Sunday, and we had a full house and really, really interested audiences. Evelyn came over to New Zealand for the first time. The first time she ever left Papua New Guinea was this time last year, when we were in the middle of the edit, and she spent a month with us in the edit process while we were kind of in the late stage of the rough cut, so she could inform us about what she thought about it and we could get feedback from her. So that was her first time outside of Papua New Guinea. I think it was a bit of a shock coming down to New Zealand in the middle of winter. but this time she's been she's much more familiar with things here and has been enjoying it, I think. Yes.
Yeah. Well, that's great. That's great. I'm loving seeing all the photos coming up on social media, and I can see, Evelyn, you're a very artistic woman as well. I'm admiring, you know, your craft and handwork. We're very, very much looking forward to welcoming Evelyn, you and you, Paul, to Masterton, to Regent Three Cinemas as part of the New Zealand International Film Festival, Whare Marama. Now, we're really lucky because we have the amazing Annie Collins, who's your editor, and she, of course, she was born here in Masterton. And I met Annie for the very first time, actually, earlier at the Wairarapa Film Festival, which I'm the director of. But I have this lovely relationship with Whare Marama, New Zealand International Film Festival, as well. We like to support each other, and it's great that I can have people come from the festival in Wellington across the hill and be present to talk with local audiences here. And they're always a really interesting bunch of people that come along and are very interested and do not hold back with asking questions and wanting to understand and to sort of dig a bit further with the story. So I'm just going to actively encourage everyone that's listening to please head into Regent 3 Cinema's online booking, or you can book in person, or indeed there's phone reservations. There's this wonderful screening of Māori Māori that's happening here at Regent 3 Cinema's, and we're really looking forward to having you here.
Yeah, great. We're also really looking forward to coming over. One thing I would like to mention is that the craft that you mentioned is Evelyn's Beeloom weaving. And she does this. The Beelooms are traditional string bags that are made up in the Highlands, but mostly by a woman. And Evelyn uses these Beelooms as a way to raise funding to support her own work. And over the last month, we've had an exhibition at Pātaka and been selling those Beelooms in order to raise funding for the safe house that we're trying to build in Goroka. The film is very much an impact film. We're trying to garner enough money together over the next year and a half to establish a safe house for the survivors in the Highlands of Papua New Guinea.
Amazing, amazing. How are you getting on with that quest to establish that safe house? I mean, this is a work in progress, but I think it's amazing that Evelyn can work towards that.
Yeah, we hope over that next year and a half we'll get to our 80,000 New Zealand goal, which will be enough to establish a house and safety perimeter around it for the people in Goroka. I think we opened on Sunday, and with the exhibition displaying the Beelooms and the sales that they've made from there, I think we're now approaching around about $8,000 or $9,000 towards that goal. So we're getting towards the 10% mark, a long way to go. But as the film travels around the world over the next year, we hope that others will join in and contribute to helping to establish that safe house.
Mm. Wonderful to talk to you, Evelyn. Wonderful to talk to you too, Paul. And very much looking forward to meeting you both here in the Wairarapa at a special screening of Māori Māori at Regent 3 Cinemas as part of Whānau Marama New Zealand International Film Festival. So thank you again, and we'll see you soon.
Okay, thank you, Drew. Looking you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Looking you. Bye.